Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trade sales for June 2012. This is what sold through Diamond to retailers. Obviously, they still have books on store shelves, so not all of these sold to readers. But, you know, this is what was actually invoiced to stores, unlike how it used to be over a decade ago, where Diamond was reporting what was pre-ordered. And that showed certain information. This shows different information, which is why I tend not to go back and mix pre-order and final order stuff. But, you know, I think we're seeing some very fascinating stuff this month in particular with what material the stores actually got on to their store shelves, into their stores and stuff in June. Keep in mind that unlike with the comic stuff, where it's pretty much stuff comes in every week and most of it'll sell through that week, obviously not all of it, but with the trade stuff, longer shelf life, different dynamic, again, very interesting this time around, because if you look at the total sales for the top 300 trades, just shy of a quarter of that, 24.99% of the total units sold went to DC Comics. They did that with 71 total items, 49 of those were reorder items, only 22 of those were new items. We've talked many times, Chris, about DC's really strong backlist on the trade side. I mean, this is just further evidence of that.
Well, especially, you know, with their Vertigo line, you know, that is definitely where they make up for it. But, boy, 22 new items. When I saw that number, I was very surprised that they had so little, you know, because, you know, Marvel, look down there, they had 46 new items. So that was very interesting.
Yeah, well, again, 46 new items from Marvel, 22 for DC, but 49 reorder activity items for DC and only 17 for Marvel. Now, Marvel only had 63 total items on the list with 19.99% of the total units, so about a 5% difference there. And what's also interesting is by dollars, DC accounted for 29.99% of the total dollars for the top 300. Marvel, 22.7% of the total dollars. Mm-hmm. So again, a pretty noticeable difference there. Both companies doing very well. What I found very, very surprising was who landed in the middle of those two.
Right.
Image had 10 new items, 28 reorder items for a total of 38. They did 20.59% of the total units sold for the top 300. Now that's only a sixth of a percent difference or sixth of a percent above what Marvel did. That equates to a little over 3,000, I'm going to say about 3,180 or so units thereabouts. Mm-hmm. So very close. But because their average price at Image for those items was closer to $17.81 versus the $24.75 at Marvel, Image only accounted for 15.86% of the total dollars for the top 300 trades. So they sold a few more units, made less dollars than Marvel, and really almost made about half as many dollars as DC. Not quite, but close.
Right.
But the fact that Image had so many items in place so strong, and beating out Marvel for a month, pretty impressive.
Well, and we kind of know what those books are that come from Image. I mean, that doesn't change from month to month. And that, of course, is The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
So really no surprise there. But that's quite a feat by Image, I would have to say. So kudos
and again,
to them.
Like you said, primarily by Kirkman, as usual.
Yeah, Kirkman, right.
But the fact that they're really giving Marvel a run for the money on the trade side is pretty cool. Obviously, the number of units they're selling on the comic book side, there's a difference almost to an order of magnitude. Mm-hmm. You know, Marvel had about 2.8, 2.9 million units for the top 300 comics versus the 388,000 plus from Image. So, like I said, pretty big difference there. Mm-hmm. But Image is one of those things where a lot of their stuff is coming out as miniseries or easily collected into trade, although obviously a lot of that's true at Marvel too. The difference is I think those trades tend to do better, not necessarily across the board, but certainly in a lot of cases. And really, Image, I think, has a stronger trade back list than Marvel.
Right. Yeah. Well, we always talk about those evergreen titles.
Yeah.
You know, for sure.
Well, and again, a lot of that is, of course, Walking Dead, but you can't really discount that as much as I might like it at times, actually. If Kirkman would just branch out and, you know, go truly creator-owned, his own publisher, and just have Kirkman Comics, that would really, I think, decimate how the trade side of Image does, much less so, I think, on the comics side. Mm-hmm. Although, it's funny. I mean, normally I don't kind of jump the gun and talk about, you know, next month's numbers and stuff, because I don't have them yet. But one of the things that came out as a press release during Comic-Con, just to put those Image Comics comic sales for the top 300 in context, again, they did in June 388,434 estimated units for all of Image Comics, the top 300 comic books. They have reported that Walking Dead 100 sold 383,612 units.
Right.
Now, I don't know how much of that's through the direct market, how much of that is other venues, or, you know, how that really pans out. You know, we'll see when we get next month's numbers. Mm-hmm. But, you know, on the surface, that's pretty damn close to how Image did in comics this month.
Yeah, right. You know.
So, you know, it's, that's just wild.
Yeah, they're going to blow everybody out of the water, I think, you know.
Well, everybody but Marvel and DC, of course.
Everybody but Marvel and DC, but, I mean, it's...
Well,
I
mean, they're going to have the top item.
I think I read Comic Book Resources, you know, the last record was like from 1997 or something like that, and I forget the name of the comic. Was Darkness, maybe, or something like that? I don't know.
I think it was the Darkness that had really insane...
Yeah.
Order activity, but the other one that did amazingly well was that Obama issue of Amazing Spider-Man. And
okay,
that
what
was,
did that
do? Which issue was that again? That was 583. All said and done, it did over 500,000 units with 524,943 estimated units. That was over the course of more than just the 1 month. Mm-hmm. Give me a second to pull up the data for that month. I've got that in a different spreadsheet here. I've got all this in a database, too, and actually a few different spreadsheets, but this is just the fastest way to pull it up. Initially, in January 2009, it did 352,856 units. So, you know, very conceivably, Walking Dead will beat that. But the interesting thing is, even if it does, it's not going to have any impact on the trade sales later down the line.
Right.
You know, that just, you know, it's based on the variant covers, the collectability, all of that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing right or wrong about that. But, you know, I'm kind of currently of the opinion that any publisher that is leaning too heavily, and I mean this more towards other publishers than Image, on collectible covers, variant covers, incentive covers, and other gimmicks like that, to me that just seems like a short-term strategy.
Mm-hmm.
As digital becomes more and more of a force, the sales bump that Walking Dead and other comics see when they do those kinds of, you know, 7, 8, 10, 20, or however many different covers they have, that doesn't translate to digital. There's not that collectible mindset.
Right, right.
So it's going to be interesting to see if there's any corresponding bump when we get to that trade way down the line on Walking Dead. I kind of, you know, would be very surprised if there was.
Mm-hmm.
But you never know. You know, on the comic side this time around, Walking Dead 99 did 55,712 units. So, obviously, a lot of that jump next time is going to be based on that. But mm-hmm. what's interesting about that 55,000 plus is the top trade this time around, unsurprisingly, the new volume of Walking Dead trade paperback. In this case, it's volume 16, A Larger World, 28,279 units.
Yeah, that's just, it's amazing.
It's
just, they're rolling, you know?
I mean, and that's first month sales.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's staggering how powerful that you know, that series is. And, you know, if they're going to be able to, you know, kind of keep going with that or not. I mean, the previous volume started with 21,845 units and has since gone up with reorder activity to 39,799 units. So while this is about almost a 29% drop from the total known reported sales for that previous volume, it's also up 6,000-7,000 units from where that other one started 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Or 6 months prior, I should say, because, of course, we're recording this in July, and we're talking about the June numbers. Anyways, to see sales figures at the top of the trades chart with, you know, closing in on 30,000, just I find staggering.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that long ago, well, actually, I guess it was, when some of these trades were starting out, you know, in the 5,000-7,000 mark. So he's now had the initial sales of the trades climbing kind of similar to how the monthly thing, monthly series climbed. Again, with the TV show doing so well, with the hoopla around issue 100 and stuff, you know, there's no end in sight for this.
Well, and he just did that massive, you know, celebration of, you know, issue 100 and, you know, we touched on the variant covers, and then you could get the, for it was $200, you get a t-shirt or postcards and pictures and that whole slew of memorabilia stuff. And then, you know, we always talk about what else could he do. And I think since we last spoke, John, that Kirkman is going to, he announced the Walking Dead Quarterly Magazine, which is going to be all things Walking Dead, which I thought that was kind of risky because, you know, everybody says print is dead these days. And if you have a quarterly magazine revolving around the TV show, well, you know, how much information can you really get out about it? And still pictures of the cast and, you know, what's upcoming in the comic is going to be kind of obsolete by the time you can get the information online. So,
but with that kind of a thing, quarterly makes sense. It gives you time to and the space yeah. to do interviews with the actors, compare how the TV series is staying
right.
true or veering from the comics, you know, what's coming up in terms of what was in the comics from where they're at in the TV series. I mean,
yeah.
there's a lot of things like that that you can do that are a lot more timeless
right.
than may first appear.
Well, and then you can, if you already know what you're going to do 6 months down the line, you can kind of tease that in that issue, and then when the issue comes out, the comic is going to be out. So
exactly. I mean, there's a lot he can do with that.
Yeah.
Or that can be done with that. I don't know if he's personally doing it or whatever, but
yeah.
I certainly can't fault him for, you know, leveraging the property as mm-hmm. extensively as he has.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, I think two board games based on it, maybe a little excessive, but that,
yeah.
you know, I'm just not that into board games, I guess. But I mean, it continues to be a sales juggernaut, and why not cash in while he can? You know, he's by and large, I think, staying fairly creatively true to, you know, the property and what he's setting out to do. And really, he hasn't done that many cheap publishing shenanigans like the variant covers on issue 100 and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So while I think it would have been more impressive for him not to have done that and only broken, say, 75,000, 100,000 or whatever with issue 100, the practical side of me understands why he probably did what he did.
Mm-hmm.
To me, what's going to be much more interesting is how the sales are on 101, 102, 103,
yeah.
you know, and again, how the sales are on the volume that collects all of those.
Well, the next volume 17 will collect 97 through whatever, so, you know, 102.
So it'll be the next volume then. Okay, I wasn't
yeah.
Well,
yeah,
sure.
Because this one goes 91 through 96.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, volume 17, you know, something to look forward to when next February or so.
Sounds about right. So. He's doing them about every 6 months. Yeah. It may even be December-ish.
December, yeah.
And I think the fact that there's a short time frame between, gosh, I just got this trade, and I'm only an issue or two behind sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
is part of what facilitates people really jumping off the trade onto the monthly series. And there was a huge, huge jump in sales on the monthly series just a few issues back, where it jumped up by about 20,000.
Hmm.
Now, again, is that sustainable or not? Based on the sales I'm seeing on both the trade and the comics side, yeah, it probably is. I mean, mm-hmm. certainly not what we're going to see for 100. That's just ridiculous. If he can sustain any significant percentage of that, in other words, if the title goes from the 55,000 to, in the early 100 issues, if that's at the 80,000 or something, to me, that's an unbelievable success if it can mm-hmm. sustain that. Because at that point, you know, if he had, you know, 80,000-ish sales, he would have outsold most of the Marvel titles aside from Avengers versus X-Men,
right?
AVX versus and Astonishing X-Men.
Does that put any kind of pressure on Marvel or DC or any other publisher? Are they just going to go about their business no matter what?
Yes and no. I think right now DC is having a still great success with the new 52 properties, the Before Watchmen stuff did well. I don't think that they're under any kind of pressure to kind of prove themselves or something.
Mm-hmm.
But if Walking Dead in particular, because I think it's the title that has the chance, is able for any kind of sustained period to be outselling pretty much every ongoing Marvel book, and I think right now there's certainly that potential, because I mean the and this is getting a little more into the comic side than we usually do, but I'm okay with that. The Astonishing X-Men 51 was the top selling ongoing Marvel book. Bob and I talked about that. It's 82,650 units due to the North Star marriage
right.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the top selling X-Men or Avenger book ongoing, or really any ongoing, had nothing to do with the Avengers versus X-Men event. And that one issue bump of about 33% or whatever, probably going to evaporate with issue 52.
Mm-hmm.
The next highest selling Marvel ongoing book was Uncanny X-Men 13, 70,523. Now, again, that's only about less than 15,000 units above Walking Dead. Now, is Walking Dead going to be able to jump that 15,000? Again, I really don't know. I'm certainly under no delusion that the 380,000 or whatever copies that most of that is not. I mean, a lot of that's going to be double dipping. We're not going to see those people return.
Right, right.
But it's got the strength of the TV show. It's got phenomenal buzz behind it. There's a lot of just grassroots interest and stuff in it. It has the best chance of having any kind of retention on that. Certainly, I thought the events of issue 100 of Walking Dead were worth talking about with other readers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If he can do that and he can outsell every ongoing Marvel or every ongoing Marvel book, and you know, do that around the time Avengers versus X-Men ends, that I think does put pressure on Marvel, because you've got a guy who at one point was actually doing work at Marvel. And, you know, kind of left saying, you know, I'm gonna go do my own thing or focus on my own thing. He'd already been doing his own thing. It says, I think, something, at least to me, if not to the mass audience out there, that here's a guy who's just going and telling a good story and doing that. I'm not going to say month in, month out. He's been late often, but usually tries to make up for it. So there's the earnest attempt to stay true to a schedule, or at least make up for it when he fails. And he's only human, so that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But if he can get to where he has worked his way up the sales charts, as he has over the last, you know, 99 issues, to where he's out selling Marvel books that have been around forever, that are characters in one of the most successful movies ever, that are, you know, Wolverine and the X-Men, who've been, you know, featured on cartoons, lunchboxes, movies, you know, you name it, for mm-hmm. decades. And here's a guy who just said, you know, I thought it'd be fun to do a zombie story. and he's outselling him, if that doesn't put pressure on Marvel, shame on them.
Right, right.
Frankly, if it doesn't also put pressure on DC, shame on them. I think they have less to prove right now, but if he's outselling all the Marvel books, he's outselling most of the DC books.
Right.
There's still a few that again, depending where it lands, would be above that. The big difference is it's one title.
Right.
Marvel and DC have this entire universe that has a certain momentum behind it for good or for bad. And I'm not even going to say that momentum's all focused in a single direction, because frankly, it's usually not. But it makes it harder to kind of turn that ship and get the perception of a line-wide increase in quality. And one of the things I think was successful with the New 52 is they kind of really shook stuff up over at DC. You know, whether people think they should have done Before Watchmen is Before Watchmen or other stuff or done it at all, that's open to debate. I mean, I've got questions myself and my own debate raging on that. But it was wildly successful. All four of those things were above 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, a couple of months from now, that's all going to be gone.
Right.
The question is, does that then give DC companion trade paperbacks to Watchmen?
Mm-hmm.
If it does, and those have any similar sort of an evergreen presence that Watchmen has, man, that's a huge win for DC.
Yeah.
Commercially. You could argue the ethical and creative successes in either direction, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, Watchmen was ranked third on the list with 11,372 units. I mean, it's now firmly above that, you know, that half million mark in terms of just reported sales through Diamond through the direct market.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to when Diamond was only reporting the top 10 trades. So I know this is a low number. I don't know how low, but it's fun to be watching the numbers at a time where a guy with, you know, just the tenacity to keep telling the story. With Kirkman and Walking Dead, is paying off in the long run.
Well, I'll be one of those guys that I'm saving their money now for the absolute Before Watchmen book or the 1500 page omnibus just to have it on the shelf.
Yeah, well, you know? They're going to have 36 issues or 35 issues worth of material for Before Watchmen.
Yeah,
and if they have not already figured out how they want to collect that up and trade hardcover, omnibus, slipcase, Uber Deluxe, you know, whatever versions.
Yeah.
Then they're fools.
Yeah.
And I don't think they are.
Yeah, I'm sure they got it all mapped out. And I mean, I would like to, as much as I enjoy reading the two-page Corsair story, I can't wait to read it all, you know, front to back.
That pirate stuff's not doing anything for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, no, that's the thing. It's not doing anything for me, but I think it would be a really good... The art is fantastic. It's just, I can't read it two pages at a time, a week apart, or whatever it is, you know, whenever I get my books. So, I mean, I lose interest in it, you know, or I, you know, don't know what's going on in the story kind of thing. So, when it comes out, I think it'll be a pretty fun read.
Well, and again, I really want to see how those do, both in their first month as trades or hardcovers or whatever.
Yeah.
They go. And if they become evergreens.
Yeah.
Because if they do, to me that kind of opens the door, or not opens the door, it certainly encourages DC to consider taking some of their other evergreen properties and going back to the well on those.
Well, Sandman, they're going to do another Sandman, so. Well,
they got Neil Gaiman, so, I mean,
yeah.
You're going to do it, you're going to do it with him. I mean, how can
right.
you complain about that?
Right.
I do worry when I see that announcement, when I see Before Watchmen, and I see so many titles, if not the actual properties under the titles, reflecting kind of, I don't want to say the glory days of DC,
mm-hmm.
but again, going back to the well and stuff that worked before. Part of what made Watchmen such a big deal, I think, was sure, it was based on characters that we'd seen before, but it was repainted new versions of them, essentially.
Right.
You know?
The old Tarleton characters, right.
Yeah. There's no reason they couldn't have done the same sort of thing with Before Watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
And having read the first issues of most of these, all the ones that I've gotten so far at least, there are a few where they definitely could have done that because it was strong material. There are one or two where, you know, I just don't think it would have worked if it didn't have the Watchmen context.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's pros and cons. But I would like to see them focusing on telling new stories that are so brilliant from the ground up versus just having to continue to leverage older material.
Yeah, you wonder if it looks like this is being successful, the Before Watchmen, what else are they going to do with these characters after these miniseries are done?
Well, I think there's a lot of curiosity with these first issues.
Yeah.
I'm not going to know, in my mind, how I think it's really done until I see the sales on the final issues.
Yeah.
Because we've seen a lot of miniseries that start gangbusters, but by the end, wow, sales just evaporated. You know, and I'm not saying that's going to be the case with Before Watchmen. It may be, it may not be. Mm-hmm. It may be that sales go up on these, because again, they put really good mm-hmm. creators on them. But to go just with the first issue of the first four and say, oh, well, you know, it's clear success. I mean, so far it has been. But, you know, how much of that was people wanting to read the first issue and then complain more about it or whatever? I don't know.
Right. Well, it could be just, you know, another title that is doing well with fans of the character is the Shade miniseries. Now, the sales are awful, and many people think it should have been canceled, but Robinson is sticking through it, and DC is sticking through it, and I think that's going to be one of those titles where, you know, undervalued or at the beginning, and it's going to do well in trade paperback form.
I think it'll do well in trade paperback form because I think it'll appeal to the people who'd been reading Starman.
Yeah.
And I think at one point a lot of them were doing that in the trade paperback format.
Right, right.
So 12 issues in that respect makes sense. I thought it was a little ambitious at first and, you know, frankly, still kind of think that.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah.
Because, I mean, like you said, the sales on that are not, you know, really just, you know, rocking the world or whatever.
And they're doing it right in the middle of the New 52 and there's no Jack Knight and... You know, it is kind of bold, you know.
It's a good read, though.
I like it. I enjoy it, yeah.
I've been enjoying it a lot more than I had expected to be honest.
Yeah, and I hope they collect it into the same omnibus form as they did the Starman books, you know, for like a book 7 type thing, you know.
If they don't make the trade, the hardcover, the omnibus fit in with the Starman collections,
yeah,
they've missed the boat.
I know.
I mean, it would just be foolish not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've seen other cases where, you know, they'll take parts of a different story or whatever and, you know, more so at Marvel than DC, I think, and then, oh, we're going to change the size of this book to be an oversized hardcover versus a regular, you know, whatever. It's just,
they screwed up that with the Captain America books way back, you know, 6 years ago or whatever it was.
It's funny when they do stuff like that because I think from their perspective, it really just doesn't matter. I had a discussion with one writer, and I'm not going to name him, although I could, but I'm not going to because I may be taking him a little out of context and misconstruing and misremembering what he said. So out of fairness, I don't want to put words into the guy's mouth. But I was talking with him and about the Marvel Now, and I was saying how after the podcasting panel at Comic-Con, a bunch of us had dinner, and one of the points of discussion was... When they relaunched Captain America, what volume number was that going to be?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking it was going to be 6. I was actually wrong. I had been not counting the current renumbering, which is volume 6, was going to be volume 7. And the point is, that was what the discussion was about.
Mm-hmm.
Not what are they going to do, who's going to be in it, what volume number is it?
Mm-hmm.
How confusing is this getting when they keep renaming, shuffling titles, names, numbers, etc.? And this creator basically... didn't flat out dismiss it. He acknowledged it was, you know, a little confusing, but that's a reader problem or that's a collector problem. I forget exactly how he phrased it, but kind of that doesn't matter unless you're really, you know, I don't say anal or whatever about it, but you know what I mean? Really focused on that part of it. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
But I kind of disagree with that when it gets to the point of, and it's gotten this way on the trade side long ago, where they keep renumbering the volumes.
How many
number one volumes of different flavors of Batman or whatever do we have? And that was right back when Batman had just the one volume on the comics side. It gets to where it's hard to point people to the right comic, the right trade paperback, or the right digital comic even. I've had times where I've had coworkers say, hey, you know, I want to read some Wolverine stuff. What do you recommend? And I got to explain to them, well, I thought the Wolverine origin versus origins versus, you know, this miniseries or that,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think the Weapon X was good, but not Wolverine Weapon X, not the Weapon X series, but the Weapon X stuff that was in Marvel Comics Presents back in the, you know. It's hard to point people to the good stuff. Not even good. I'm not even going to say that's even part of the equation. To point them to any specific stuff sometimes.
Right.
And I think that hurts everybody.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody's heard that, you know, Dark Knight is just brilliant as a comic, and they start picking up Batman the Dark Knight. Well, this isn't the story I was told. Where's Frank Miller? You know, whatever.
Right.
It's a little confusing.
Right.
That's something that is going to haunt the industry for a while.
Mm-hmm.
That ship has sailed, sunk, raised, sailed, sunk again. And will continue to do so as long as those techniques, as weakened as they have become, continue to have any level of success.
Right. I think even you talked about one time where, you know, every year just give a new number one and it would just be like number one of 2008, number one of 2009, and so on. Just do the 12 issues, just like a magazine would do. You know, Time Magazine does that.
Think about that, though, for a second. When Marvel double shipping certain comics,
They're
coming out every other week.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a couple of these that I'm afraid I'm going to get 26 issues of this year.
Right.
And I say afraid because it's hard to keep up. We've talked about this before, so this is no real, you know, revelation. I read comics.
Mm-hmm.
I read a lot of comics. You know, I don't read that much in the trade side, but I mean, this month I went through actually the top 300 comics and marked off all the ones that I had. Now some of these are reorder activity, etc., but most of them aren't. Only about a dozen or so are reorder activity. I had 179 items.
My God, John, that's insane.
But I think that's also part of what colors my opinions on these sales figures is I've actually read most of these.
Right, right.
You know, on the trade side, it's a much lower percentage simply because we have so many more publishers represented on this. I mean, in June, we've got 17 publishers on the top 300 comics, but we've got 30 on the trade side. And there are some of these publishers I know I have read nothing from.
Right.
But a lot of these only have an item or two on the list. So, I mean, what are the odds I'm going to have read that particular thing?
Well, if it's a book by Hatchett or Abrams or Random House or, you know, a Tashin or one of those, you know. But, I mean, look at Top Shelf this month on the trade side, you know. I mean, they got League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Volume 3. So
now that was in rank 2, 20,633 units, $9.95. How many pages is that?
It's your 60, I think it's only 60, you know, it's like a big...
It's like a comic book.
Like a
it's
comic
got
book.
An issue number on it.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would have put this on this list.
Right.
We've had this discussion every time. We'll have it again every time it shows up, probably.
No, because we've had 80-page giants and 100-page spectaculars on the comic side, but then we get a book like this, which is 65, 72 pages, and it's considered a graphic novel.
I would like to understand...
That's a question for Diamond, you know?
Diamond or Top Shelf,
or
I don't know who's
shelf.
Really right. deciding which list it goes on. It could be the Top Shelf is actually listing it as it's a graphic novel.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things. There are no hard and fast rules. I frankly think we've gotten to the point where the term graphic novel has expanded to cover almost too much.
Yeah.
I mean, I try to use it exclusively for things that are, in this case, and it would qualify with League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, original to that format. Something like the Batman Earth 1. Granted, it's a hardcover, but to me, it qualifies as a graphic novel. The season one stuff from Marvel.
Right.
The Batman Death by Design by Chip Kidd. The Empowered stuff. Things that are not collections of individual issues that were serialized out. To me, that's a trade paperback. It's a hardcover. That's a collected edition.
Mm.
You know, but I mean, the Watchmen's a graphic novel, according to some people. It's like, I don't know about that. It's at the point where I'm almost ready to concede that battle is lost, that term is less meaningful than it was. But, I mean, I'm not reading League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. You know, did Top Shelf have anything else on the list this time around, or had two other things? What were those
two other things? Yeah.
me filter the list. That's the thing. With 30 different publishers, I can never remember what's coming out from who. They've got Lost Dogs and Lovely Horrible Stuff.
Yeah.
If it's lovely, how can it be horrible?
Never heard of them.
Yeah. Again, some of these publishers, due to the taste I've got in comics, just don't, you know, register on my radar. Nothing right or wrong about that. Everybody has different tastes and stuff. But even so, you know, I got... I'm sure if I were to mark through on this, I would have at least a quarter of the list, possibly a third of the list. I don't know if I'd go higher than that or not. And that would be talking about things I've read the contents of, not things that I have the actual trade of. But, you know, I find it very interesting because, I mean, top two items here are, you know, an Image item and a top shelf item. Next item is a DC reprint, not reprint, but, you know, reorder activity. And then we get a volume of The Boys, a volume 11 from Dynamite, 5,445 estimated units. So we went from 28,000 plus to 20,000 plus to 11,000 plus to 5,445. That's normally where the list would have started this month. You know, it's the fact that the top three items had 60,000 plus units of sales out of a total of... How much do we have this time around? 364,903 units. So roughly a sixth of the sales came from 1% of the items on the list. I mean that shows how kind of lopsided the list is this month. I mean it's very unusually so that it is this way, but. You know, it's also not too far down the list. We're at rank 7, we're under 5,000. We're at rank 9, we're under 4,000, only by a hair, but still. And then as we get down to rank 12, we're under 3,000. You know, it's not that much further. Rank 39, we're under 2,000. So we've got a ton of things continuing to come out in the trade, hardcover, premier hardcover, absolute, omnibus, you know, whatever the collected edition format is. And I think we're seeing, in some cases, phenomenally great sales, but in most cases, just okay, if that. In a lot of cases, these things are never going to be a blip on the radar on BookScan if they even make it into the mass market, and are unlikely to really show up ever again on this list, even though this list is currently going down to under 300 units. And we've got half dozen items that sold under 300 units. Now, granted, with the resolution of the data, you know, we are talking about, you know, about 13 unit increments at this part of the list. We've got another dozen items that sold right around 300. So things can do minimal reorder activity and you know, if they sell about 300, they ought to make it near the bottom of the list, maybe not on the bottom of the list. And we're not seeing that. I mean, one of the ones that pops to me on this is at rank 39 itself with 1,980 units, and that's the Battle Scars trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
That's something where the miniseries itself just totally, I think, flew under people's radar. But that's where they introduced the new Nick Fury.
Right, that's right.
So that
rings a bell to me now, right?
Yeah. I mean, there were people who actually wrote into, was it Deadpool? One comic I was reading this week, and I've been reading a lot, trying to catch up from being gone from con. Somebody had written into the letters page saying, I think you guys goofed. You had the ultimate Nick Fury in this book in a cameo, and he shouldn't have been. And tried to explain it away as maybe it's got something to do with the walls of the multiverse breaking down for the whole Spider-Man thing or whatever. It was actually a fairly clever no-prize attempt.
Right.
And they're like, no, you just didn't read Battle Scars. I mean, they said it nicely, but, you know, that's something that, that could, I don't want to say be a sleeper hit. It could be a sleeper that sells a little more down the line.
Yeah.
But it may also vanish into the ether, never to be seen again. You know, so many of these things where they're just collecting every half dozen issues, they don't need to. There's no, I mean, yeah, you get 1,000 or 2 units of sales, but I question if that is more beneficial than simply not collecting every miniseries and stuff, and therefore giving readers more of an incentive to go pick up the individual issues.
Right.
But I don't know where I would, how I would do the calculus to determine if it sold this low or this high, do you do a collected edition or not? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a tough call, because if you look at like DC stuff with the lower end of the New 52, like Men of War or something like that, do you not collect it? Or, you know, because it's a number one volume, you might get that little sales spike, you know?
Well, with Men of War, I mean, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
Why collect it now?
Right.
You're not going to get new readers onto the title. Title's over,
right.
You know, all you're doing is benefiting those that didn't support the title. So I think there's a case where, you know, maybe they shouldn't do that. Maybe they shouldn't do static, you
right.
know? Other ones, I'm seeing a couple here on the list, X-Men Schism, Infinity Gauntlet, things like that that are event-type deals. Those, I think, makes sense to collect, because those are almost mile markers on the timeline of the universe. They are pivoting points where things turn left or right in a big way for the universe. So it makes sense to make those accessible to later readers. You know, we still have things that are referencing back to Schism, to Civil War, to,
mm-hmm.
Well, even in some cases to Infinity Gauntlet.
Right.
So keeping those aspects again accessible, I think, makes a lot more sense than, do you really need to reprint, or not reprint, but collect the X Club miniseries for the X-Men stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you didn't, would, and people knew that was going to be the case, might more people have gotten it?
Mm-hmm.
It comes down to driving desired behavior. What is the behavior you desire? And then how do you work towards driving it towards that? Flip side, Morning Glories at rank 10. Got the third trade paperback there to 3,712 units. Definitely, that's something I would be collecting pretty much as they're doing now, as soon as, you know, it makes sense to do that, get those things out there. Because I think that's a deep enough story that having people read it and be able to reference back to it and stuff benefits the sales. I don't think it undercuts them and stuff as it does on a lot of these other titles. But, you know, that's just my current perspective on that. I, of course, reserve the right to radically change that as other information makes it seem either increasingly brilliant or completely ludicrous. One of the other things that's kind of interesting here in terms of what do people prefer. At rank 66, we got the Watchmen hardcover.
Yeah, I did see that, yeah.
1,511 units, bringing its known reported sales to 16,589 units. Making me think that there is a definite preference toward the trade paperback, which is priced at $19.99 versus the hardcover at just about twice that price, $39.99. So I think there's something to be said for having deluxe hardcover, more, you know, nicer, impressive collected editions. I certainly see the benefit of that, and why some people would want an omnibus version of Watchmen on their shelf or what have you. But I think, again, being more sparing with when you go to that format would give it more of the sense of rarity, the sense of importance, the sense of, wow, that really is worth having in that format.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the absolutes and stuff like that. I mean, they don't crank that out for just anything, and I think it's good that they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Now, speaking of should they or shouldn't they have collected these, ranks 78 and 79, we've got Static Shock Volume 1, Mr. Terrific Volume 1, both are trade paperbacks. Both sold around 1,342 units, with Static Shock potentially just edging out Mr. Terrific. based on the way Diamond reports the data, I really can't tell from this, but based on one having ranked higher than the other. Both of those, I believe, collect the full 8 issues of each of those titles. I think there's more of a case for having collected Mr. Terrific, since he's showing up over in Earth 2 and is having ramifications over in World's Finest. I really don't know that there's anything that mandated that Static Shock get collected. I mean, I would be hard-pressed to name any reason why somebody right now would need to have a collection of that to enhance their understanding of any title DC's currently got. I mean, I could be wrong on that, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's maybe they're just starting to get in on the New 52 now, you know, and they just want an easy, quick way to get back into the swing of things and read what Static's been doing in, what is he in, 19 Titans.
He's not in anything right now.
He's not in anything right now.
That's my
Terrific
point.
Terrific is in JSA.
That's my, well, Mr. Terrific is showing up on Earth 2.
Earth 2, okay.
He's physically there, and then in the flashbacks of World's Finest, he's being referenced a bit.
Yes.
So, again, that makes sense. But by cranking everything out in hardcover, trade paperback, etc., as soon as they can, people who might get deeper into the New 52 if they read Mr. Terrific because they're loving, you know, Earth 2 and World's Finest, maybe they pick Static Shock instead for some reason and don't get that deeper interest. I think if they were to thin the herd and be a little more targeted on some of this stuff, it might actually benefit them in the long run. It might not. It's hard to tell.
You know what I haven't seen, and we talked about it last month, is the Ray. I have not seen the Ray get a solicitation yet.
I'm not too surprised by that in so much as it was a 4-issue limited series. I don't think it's big enough to collect.
Yeah, so I wonder if they're going to combine it with, you know, the DC Presents book or something like that. I don't know.
It would almost make sense to combine it with Challengers of the Unknown.
Or Challengers, yeah.
Which was in the DC Universe Presents or the Sage storyline.
Yeah, maybe they're going to wait and do that.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how and if they collect.
But you and
those.
I both like that though.
Oh, so. I love yeah, the Ray.
That was neat.
Jamal Igel art. I mean, how can you go wrong with that? Jeez. But what would be the incentive at the moment, since we haven't really seen the character since, to collect it? And if that's maybe the start of them saying, you know, let's not collect everything, and retrain the readers and the retailers. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, at one point, Marvel had trained retailers saying, you know, we're printing to order. You don't order it, we don't print it, you can't get it. No reorders. And this was many, many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. But I think there's still a lot of carryover from that. And it was fear-based marketing, but it worked. They're still doing it on the Marvel Max titles. You look at the Marvel previews, Marvel Max titles are printed to order. There will be no overprint. Mm-hmm. You want it, order it now. And that's, you could argue the ethics of doing that, but we've trained everybody to, if you like the series, just wait for the trade. It's more convenient. You get the whole story in one shot, etc. We're now at the point where people are waiting on the trades. You know, we've got a lot of things that, that frankly, the sales are more than a little unimpressive on some of these. Let me filter out the reorders real quick and... What else do we have kind of down in this area? It would be, let's go to a Marvel or DC, because I think they have the most market penetration and awareness and really the biggest opportunity for sales. Fear Itself, Fearless, that premier hardcover did 1,094 units. Let's actually go for just the trades, because on the theory, those are going to be the cheaper, more likely ones to go. And I'm looking for the most recent content. Really, that Static Shock and Mr. Terrific are at the low end of that spectrum.
Yep.
X Club, again, 1,700. So it's not quite as bad as I was afraid it might be. But, you know, if you're only doing about 2,000 or whatever when you collect it in trade, that's not going to be enough to turn the tide of do we keep this title around or not if the monthly side is questionable. You know, how these things do in digital, You know, there are a lot of factors that are going to determine what titles stick around, what ones go away. But I think they could start to steer sales on both the trade and the monthly side by collecting fewer things.
Mm-hmm.
Wait until there's some pent-up demand or something, you know? I mean, it's cool that you can get everything you want in a collected edition. But maybe if you throttle back on that a little, maybe it'll bump up also the digital sales. I don't know. Maybe the digital sales are going to drive these down anyways.
Right. I mean, yeah, if you want to buy, I mean, I don't even know if it's available, so I'm just speculating. But let's say you want to buy the Ray 4-issue series. Well, you can get them for, you buy all four of them, and it's, you know, $5 or whatever.
Well, worst case right now, it should be $1.99 an issue on digital. So $8, you got the four issues.
Oh, I think they should all be $1. I mean,
I don't.
You know, I think $1 would be fine. You know,
let me explain why I think it'd be a mistake to do like a 99-cent sale on the new 52. If you do that digitally, and right now I could be wrong, but I do not believe they have done that yet. The minute they do that for any new 52 content, suddenly anybody who's on the fence of, well, do I really want to pay that much or not for any new 52 content? I'll wait for that 99-cent sale.
Mm-hmm.
You have just given them the out.
Yeah, but I'm kind of comparing it to a song, and you have a 99-cent song on iTunes.
Yeah.
But with a song though, you listen to it over and over and over again, and it's only 2 minutes, and you don't read comics over and over and over again.
Exactly. I mean, comic books are not a song.
Right.
They are, in too many cases, the chapter of a longer story, so they're incomplete in that respect. They don't have, like you said, the replayability. I mean, maybe I'm unique this way, but I've actually had times in the past where I'll pop a CD, or even back with the, mainly with CDs, I guess, but, you know, with an iPod or whatever, I'll pop something in, and I will just hit the replay button, because I really like the song. It's just cool.
Right.
Nice to listen to. You know, some songs are just kind of catchy that way or whatever. Not all, not most, but a couple. I would be hard-pressed to name how many times I've read a comic and said, you know what, I'm going to go read that comic again.
Right.
And then, you know what, I'm going to read it a third time. Now, sometimes I'll do that because I'm either reviewing it and I got a little lost or tired or whatever, but never because it's, wow, this was such a brilliant comic. I mean, there have been very few movies where I walked out of the theater thinking, you know, I'm tempted to buy another ticket and walk right back in that theater.
Right.
The Tarzan animated film was actually one of the few that I felt that way about. I thought it was just brilliant how they integrated the song, the movie, the story, everything. Comics aren't that way.
Mm-hmm.
So saying they should be priced as the equivalent of a 99-cent track on a CD, I don't think holds water. Tracks on CDs are individual songs. They may build up to something.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the sum is greater than the whole of the parts kind of a deal, or the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. Anyways, I'll butcher that saying a few more times, no doubt.
Well, what about buying the complete 6-issue series as a discount then?
I would not.
So if it's $2 an issue and you have six issues, you know, don't have it be 12, have it be 10 or $9.
I would not bundle them together. What I would do is I would say, if you bought the first, I'll give you a discount on the second. You bought the first, I'll give you a discount on the third.
Yeah.
And maybe even a slightly incremental discount. But something that is training the reader to get the next issue. And maybe even hey, it's out. If you buy it today,
mm-hmm.
I'll knock another couple of percent off. Minimal discount, but enough to trigger the sale.
Mm-hmm.
And something to, again, get in that buying habit. But the minute they go for a 99-cent sale on a new 52 thing, like I said, there's an out. I'll just wait. I mean, I was talking to a coworker today who had considered getting the entire 100-issue run of Walking Dead digitally, $75. That's 75 cents an issue. That's an awesome price. That's mm-hmm. amazing. $75, though, in one shot was more than this guy was willing to pay. And frankly, I don't blame him.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was done where he could have done it one at a time, hey, I like this, I'll buy the next. I like this, I'll buy the next. And something where, I mean, it's training two sets of behaviors. One on the reader side to come back for that next and keep the chain going. But also, and the more beneficial thing it's training, is the creators to make something that's so good that people felt they got their money's worth and are ready to buy the next issue right now. And, oh, wait, digitally, after a while, I mean, the content builds up, it's available.
Mm.
You know? I can't expect a reader that I say, you should read, we'll use Walking Dead as an example, 100 issues, okay? And most people think it's brilliant stuff. So I can't say to a coworker, go down to the comic book store, buy that first issue, because one, they're not going to have it. They're certainly not going to have it at cover price. Go home, read it. If you like it, go back to the store, go buy the second issue, same problems, rinse, repeat. However, I can say digitally, you know, and frequently they'll have their tablet right there. Pull up the store, go to this, boom, get it. Okay, you bought it for whatever price it was. If they like it and they've got the decision points to where they feel they can quit at any time.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a you can't eat just the one chip kind of mentality, and I think Walking Dead can be that kind of an addictive story, as can Fables, as can either Sandman or some of these other evergreen kind of
right
trade paperback series. That's more likely to get the $75 out of somebody. If it's not, I've got to go pull out this huge chunk of change in one shot right now. But you've essentially nickeled and dimed them. Now, maybe it takes you 2 weeks to get that whole thing, but you get it. I mean, to me, that's the smarter way to go. And that's something where I really wish I could get a hold of some of the behind-the-scenes sales information and stuff, the transaction-level data for something like Comixology, and see what are the buying habits really like. Now, I think they're different digitally than they are in print, but I think one can inform the other. And, you know, one of the concerns I've always had on the trade side is 6 months between issues. I went through a period where I was reading every Star Trek novel that came out, you know, but there comes a point where, you know, over the course of 6 months, I may cut back drastically on my reading. I may just not go back to the bookstore. I may essentially forget the next volume's coming out, or by the time it comes out, not care. You can't build up that habitual reading cycle as well with a trade. You know, it doesn't have the frequency it needs. And if you're bundling stuff up digitally, you can have similar problems, whereas if you keep it as bite-sized installments. We're starting to see a lot of publishers, not a lot, we're starting to see strategic cases, I think, where publishers are doing content digitally first, in small increments, and then collecting them into issues. DC's doing that with the Batman Unlimited, I believe, the Smallville season 11. They've got Legends of the Dark Knight, where they're doing a bunch of, what, 8-10-page stories?
Yeah.
Ami Kami, or whatever, the Japanese-based stuff. Archie is doing it with the New Crusaders. And this is stuff they're releasing on a weekly basis in, like, 8-page installments-ish that collect nicely into an issue of a comic once a month. Wow, what a great way to amortize the content creation, be getting some money back on that, feeding into the print medium, which you can then triple dip potentially on a trade. It's something that if people want the story momentum of the weekly basis, they can do that digitally. If they prefer the monthly comic, they can do that. If for some reason they like reading stuff in a collected edition format, presumably Archie's going to do that. I imagine DC's going to do the same. I mean, there are pros and cons to each packaging format, different behavior patterns that they engender or fight against. And I'm wondering when we're going to hit the point where the revenue from digital is enough. Because at one point I thought it was going to be trades that were going to be the up and coming revenue stream. They're far from it.
Mm-hmm.
Digital could be. And it's a way to essentially serialized print content, which is just a wacky idea. But if that becomes enough to generate the content creation and fund that, that's a game changer. And I think different publishers are pushing towards that for different reasons in different ways. And it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, a couple of years from now, 5 years, I don't know when, we see that tipping point where it goes to where a few things are starting to be just digital first, maybe they're not always collecting to print, whatever, and then suddenly just a floodgate opens. I think we're already seeing something along those lines over at Marvel, where it's, well, we're just going to do day-and-date digital free copies on the Ultimate line. Then, well, anything that's $3.99. Now it's getting to where I've got a stack a couple inches deep of things I got to pull the free digital code out of. It's free. Why won't I redeem them? I mean, geez. I'm going to be building up a sizable digital library from Marvel just based on the free redemption codes from the print stuff. It's a very interesting time to be watching what the publishers are doing, to seeing where the sales figures are on the trade and the monthly sides. Wish I could get that for the digital, but have not had any luck so far. And I think there are other game changers out there that are happening. I think what Mark Waid's doing over at Thrillbent, where he's giving away the content for free. Man, if that doesn't determine what a potential audience for a comic book story is, the price is right. The only thing preventing people from coming back is they forget or they weren't interested. And if they forget, then frankly, they weren't interested enough. So I think there's a lot that can be learned from what Wade's doing over at Thrillbent with the free content. So very exciting times in those respects.
Yeah, we're definitely entering a new era with, you know, everything seemingly turning on its head within the on the comic side, and conversely, that'll happen on the trade side as well.
Well, it's one of those things.
And if they want to go into the trade side, you know, you're right, they could skip it and go into, right into digital. So,
well, it's one of those things where these things are happening in almost slow motion at times, and at other times, blink and you missed it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a slow transition, I think, at times, but a very fast at the beginning of, you know, suddenly, boom, DC went day and date digital with pretty much their entire line. You know, that was 10 months ago. Now we're seeing a slow transition to, well, let's do some content digital first.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to see that to where certainly, you know, suddenly things flip in certain areas? I don't think it'll be Marvel and DC that necessarily do that, but I'm really impressed with how much DC is kind of pushing the envelope on that.
Mm-hmm.
With some of their properties. Some of the properties that I think are most likely to be successful in that kind of a digital first realm.
Yeah, it's a good start anyway.
So, you know, they're doing things that are more manga-ish or more mass market media-friendly kind of properties. You know, I don't think it would make sense to take an obscure character and say, well, let's do a digital first series on Ambush Bug or something.
Right.
I think it'd tank.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, who knows? Maybe I'm wrong and they'll try it. They've certainly proved me wrong a time or two in the past. They've also proved me right a couple of times in the past. I just want to see something kind of start turning the ship around and really strengthening sales on an ongoing basis, because it's cool and all when something is successful and does well, but it's much cooler when you've got a stable foundation for sales to build on, and they can spring forward from there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, imagine how something like Walking Dead would be doing if the average comic was staying steady in sales, and that was the norm, and he wasn't having to fight potential attrition or the expectation of attrition. And, I mean, you've got to assume there are people who are actually reading Walking Dead, trying it for an issue, and saying, you know, it's just not for me.
Mm-hmm.
And most titles, that's the majority. And if he's got that kind of sandy, you know, footing to be pushing off from, versus, you know, if he'd had something where it was rock solid, most comics, you know, they sell X pretty consistently, and he could be building on top of that. I mean, he could have potentially broken through 100,000 by now easily. You know, we're just not at that point where we've got those steady sales. Tons of things they can do to try to fix that, but, you know, to a certain extent, you're not having enough content for the price of the issue. You know, you're not having any reason to go pick up the issue because everything gets collected. There are so many things working counter to stronger sales. It's a little overwhelming at times. But even with all of that, 28,279 top of the list for the trades this time around.
That's pretty good.
I mean, that the bottom of the list, 287 units. That's what, 100 times difference? That's amazing.
Well, we'll have to come back to Walking Dead 16 in a few months and to double check to see how that one compares.
Do me a favor. When 17 comes out,
Yeah.
Shoot me an email, or maybe the listeners will help remind us, and I'll start prepping a chart.
Okay.
For how Walking Dead the monthly is doing, how the different trades have done, and we can really kind of dig into it at that point.
All right.
Because at that point we should have a couple of issues, you know, after the 100 to see how it stabilized, if at all, or how it plummeted, or you know, whatever happens. And we can dig into.
Yeah, it should come out in December. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I will have forgotten by then.
Nah, I'll remind you.
I know.
For sure.
And if not, listeners, please chime in. And if the listeners have stuff they want us to dig into on, gee, how are these trades doing, or what do we think about this, please ask questions.
Yeah, for a specific title, for sure.
I mean, I'm doing this because I'm interested in how the sales trends are and are not, and, you know, how they're changing, how they're not. But, you know, sometimes a really good question from somebody has really sparked me to go chart things in a way I hadn't thought about before, or dig a little deeper into something, and I'll uncover something that I just hadn't really fully realized. I may have thought about or whatever, but or just haven't talked about for a while. I mean, we've been doing these episodes for 5 years now.
Yeah, sounds easily.
About right. So there's some stuff that periodically is just good to go back and do either a refresher course on or reassess and see if those theories and trends still hold water or not. Number of different price points this time around. We had, what do we got that looks interesting? 46 items at the $19.99 price point, 44 at the $14.99, 35 at the $24.99, and then just a bunch of, you know, a couple here, a couple of there kind of a deal. 22 at the $9.99 price point. Two, and I'm going to rant about this for just a brief second, at the $3.99 price point. What are those items? How can we have something that costs? In this case, it was the Marvel Universe Ultimate Spider-Man Comic Reader number 1 and number 2 trade paperbacks. I'm not sure how many pages those are, but at $3.99, I'm gonna say maybe they should have been on the other list.
Mm.
That's just ridiculous. That sort of thing again drives me nuts. It skews the rankings and the numbers and puts things essentially in the wrong context. You know, I can see having trades that are $6.99 maybe or whatever. I mean, the Power Rangers trade paperback is a $6.99. It is, how many pages is this? I've got 63 pages or so. And it's a little bit shorter, a little bit thinner than a comic book. It's got a square binding. I mean, to me, That's right on that blurry line. You know, I could see where this could be considered either a comic or a trade and not a clear-cut definition or decision either way. But yeah, there are a couple of these. It's like, come on, it's ridiculous. So that's pretty much what I had to rant about and talk about this time around. You got anything else?
No, that's pretty much it, man. I'm good this month. Yeah.
So what do you got coming up on your show?
You know, I just did my Comic-Con wrap-up where I talked about all the hardcovers and trades and the announcements, or the lack of announcements that came out from every company, which is always a good roundup of information. But yeah, you know what? Nothing on the horizon, John. It's a clean slate.
Cool.
So, yeah. What about you?
Well, let's see. As we record this, the next episode I'm going to record is going to be our Comic-Con wrap-up. It's going to be Bob and I, and I think a listener or two might be able to join us. We're going to talk about all the various things we did and saw and stuff at San Diego. Always fun. We, of course, just got back from there, did the podcasting panel, got that up on the feed. That's always a fun experience. We've got the weekly comic spotlight. We've gone through 257 of those so far, so on number 258, I mean, we've been doing these, seems like, forever.
Mm.
Blue Beetle 11, Captain Marvel number 1, and Star Trek number 11. It's the Tribbles issue of Star Trek, so I'm looking forward to that, or the first of the two-part Tribbles.
Mm-hmm.
With the Star Trek stuff, they've been revisiting classic Trek stories and retelling them in the new movie continuity.
Right.
So that's fun. I'm enjoying that. Beyond that, it's gonna be, I think, another week or two, and then it's time for, the preview spotlight, And it's not going to be too much longer before it's time for us to get back together for the July data, because, of course, the June data came out while I was in San Diego. It gets busy for me this time of year.
Just like Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, the end of the year, and the middle of the year, and the end of the year, the two busiest times for us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of it at the end of the year and stuff is once we get that December data, we do those, and then the year-end wrap-up and stuff.
Yeah.
And this is why we don't do a middle-of-the-year wrap-up. It's like, I'm too busy. Hey, this is fun stuff, but I need time to catch up on my comics because...
No, but we do have to start planning, you know, at least me anyway, of you know, what's the best of the year kind of stuff so far, and then so that way you don't have to wait until December to figure out your best of the year, so...
That, you know, is an excellent idea because I always have a hard time doing those lists. I mean, we talked about how I got 179 items on that list of the top 300, but I mean, right. I'm averaging about 4 dozen comics a week. And this is the time of year. I mean, it was a little worse this year than normal because in addition to being out at San Diego in June, I took the cruise. So I was out for a little bit there, a little behind on my reading. Then it comes time for San Diego. I leave on a Friday. My comics are now starting to arrive on Fridays, which is great. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
DCBS shifted to FedEx, so I'm now getting my books on Friday afternoon, evening versus Monday morning. That's the whole weekend to read it. But that meant I had the shipment from July 4th, which came on the 6th, the 11th, and the 18th, all pretty much stacked up on me when I got back from Comic-Con. I picked up whatever flu or cold thing was floating around. It's that kind of slowed me down. But I had like 3 weeks worth of comics to read. That's like, you know, 120 or so comics almost, give or take. I'd have to actually count up. Plus what I had left over. It's a bit overwhelming. So just, you know, plowing through all that takes a little time.
Mm-hmm.
But, it was really kind of funny this year. It's like, I think I just read this title. Oh, wait, it's coming out again because it's bi-weekly at Marvel. The pace they're doing is a little hard for me to sustain at times, but you know, I love reading this stuff. It's all good. I'm glad to be back from Comic-Con. It was fun. It's always an odd, juxtaposition to be looking at the sales figures, seeing how in some cases they're great. In other cases, most cases, they're kind of lackluster, and then seeing tons and tons of people at Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I consider myself a hardcore comic book fan. I think I support the comics. I read the comics. I am committed to comics. I had a number of people, and I can understand where this is coming from, but I found it, we'll go with ironic versus annoying, because I know some of these people meant it in the best of ways. Before Con, I was asked by quite a few people, have you seen The Avengers? Have you seen Spider-Man? Have you seen, you know, whatever. And I'm like, well, actually, they would ask if I'd seen Spider-Man. I'm like, no, I haven't even seen The Avengers. You haven't seen The Avengers? Are they going to let you in the building?
Shh.
I'm like, they damn well better. I'm reading more comics than probably have the entire lineup at Hall H over there.
Right.
Maybe not, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And it's funny that in the modern kind of context, to be seen as a true comic fan, have you seen the film?
Yeah, right, right.
Which, you know, I get it. I'm not bothered by that, but it's ironic. It's funny. It's also a little sad.
Well, that's the mentality of everybody these days, so.
Yeah. But, you know, given the shooting at the Dark Knight thing over in Colorado or whatever, it's like, I'm okay not doing the midnight showing on some of these things. That's just scary stuff.
Well, I'm not into midnight showings because I just can't stay up for it. And, you know, and I can't. Do the all day marathon of all the movies, and it's like that's too much for me to sit down in a movie theater all at once for 13 hours or something like that. You know, like when they did Lord of the Rings or they did the Avengers and they did Dark Knight. It's like that's just way too much.
I am a serious fan about a lot of things, but I am not so obsessive that I will stand in the line for multiple hours, much less multiple days, for something at Comic-Con.
Right.
I'm not going to go to a midnight showing. I'm frankly getting too old for that.
Yeah, I'm just not, right.
You know, I would fall asleep during the movie, particularly a three-hour-long movie.
Right. And then you have to get out of the theater at 3 o'clock in the morning and then drive home and then sleep till noon. So
I got nothing against the people that do this. I see where they want to do it, where they enjoy it. I think that is awesome.
Yeah.
It's just not for me. You know?
I saw Dark Knight on Sunday at 10 a.m.
Cool. That's a good time to do it.
Went to the theater, you know, and it was great. So, you know, what was crazy, though, is you get to the theater at 10 o'clock for a 10:10 show. And granted, it's, you know, 10 in the morning on Sunday, so you can get there 10 minutes early.
Yeah.
You get in your seat. You know, I grabbed a coffee, actually. You know, I did. I grabbed a coffee.
And, that's funny.
And, you know, first time I ever drank coffee in a movie theater. And sat down 5 minutes after 10 and had 20 minutes of previews. It was like, really? You know, I mean, it was cool to see the Superman preview, but it's like, that's about it. And, you know, movie started at 10:30. Then I got out of there at 1:15 or 1:20. I was like, oh, my God, you know, where'd the day go? You know, the day was half over.
I would be starving by that point.
I can't imagine doing three movies. You know?
Yeah. That's again, I think it's awesome that people want to go do that and enjoy doing that. I have no problems with that. I think that's great for them, and they should certainly have the opportunities. But, yeah, I frankly prefer watching some of the stuff on DVDs. I've got a projection system, so I've got not the full big screen experience, but you know, not too shabby. And you know, if it's something where, you know, I have a movie that's longer than my bladder will allow, I can pause the movie.
Exactly. Right.
If something was a little confusing or I didn't quite catch that line of dialogue and I think it's important, I can actually rewind.
Mm-hmm.
I am in control. And there's aspects where that's just really cool.
Yep.
If I want to watch the trailers, I can. If I want to skip the trailers, if I want to watch them afterwards, I want to see the deleted scenes, if I want to watch the director commentary, right. I have the power.
Put your feet up and, you know, whatever, you know.
I can
and
have...
You can have your cell phone on during the movie.
Usually do.
I usually do.
The thing is, I don't have that many people who call me, because I usually yell at people who call me when I don't want them to.
Yeah.
I'm not really that bad. Seriously, it's more a matter of... there aren't that many people that call me, you know? It's, I think you, Bob, my sister, my parents, and they work if it's a big problem.
Well, one of the reasons why I saw Dark Knight so early, you know, that I wanted... because I didn't want to get spoiled by it. And, you know, I didn't really care to get spoiled by Spider-Man or Avengers. But with Dark Knight, you know, there's so much going into it. I didn't want to be spoiled by it. So I'm very glad I saw it.
I can understand that. And that's, you know, part of why I tend to avoid sites that will spoil stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I don't follow most of the comic news sites. Not because I think they're malicious or trying to spoil stuff, but some of the press releases spoil stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? But that's just, you know, would I like to see it the day the stuff opens? Certainly. But part of it is time, part of it's convenience, part of it is, you know, I want to be able to eat what I can eat versus be at the mercy of, you know, whatever outrageous concession stand prices are going to be or what would poison me at the theater and stuff like that. So it's a convenience factor.
All right.
And, you know, I usually watch a lot of the stuff with my sister, and it's fun for us to be able to talk about it after it or sometimes even during. There have been a couple of times I will, you know, not catch something or I'll catch something she missed, and we can clarify it for each other. And we're not talking throughout the whole movie, but we have the flexibility to do that if we want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just, to me, that's the preferred viewing experience. But, you know, at some point I'll watch all those things.
Oh, yeah.
But no rush. So, cool. Anything else, or is that pretty much do it for this episode?
I think I'm good, John, yeah.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title.
For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales to competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.